Hey, this is Ed. So this is a podcast, is that right?
This is.
Okay. We're officially podcasting right now. That's awesome.
This is Straight from the Cutter's Mouth.
Welcome to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth, a retina podcast. At least once a week, we aim to bring you insights and perspectives from the world of vitreoretinal surgery. I'm your host, Dr. Jay Schreeder. Today, on episode 177, we do something a little different. We're bringing on two of our young colleagues, Drs. Andrew Pope and Benjamin Young, who have founded the podcast Eyes for Ears. For those of you who don't know, Eyes for Ears is a rapidly growing in popularity podcast that just started this year. That is an OCAPS and Board Review podcast for ophthalmology residents, fellows, and trainees, and really a tremendous resource that has grown, as I said, very, very quickly. I bring on Andrew and Ben to talk about their podcast, Podcasting for Ophthalmology, and what they see in terms of medical education and as residents right now in training and who are contributing to the field of advancing online and digital education, what they see going forward. We recorded a back-to-back podcast. We did a podcast first about macular holes that was released last week on their podcast, which is found at eyesforears.com. And this week, we focus more on their podcast and also, again, a kind of a discussion of where we see medical education heading. Hopefully you enjoy. Remember that a list of financial disclosures will be attached in the episode description. You can now claim CME credits via the AAO website and click on the link in the episode description to claim CME for these episodes. Also, don't forget, if you have not already filled it out, we have our survey going around. Our survey is capturing data from our listeners to get a sense of what we can do better, what sort of things you like. Do you want different intro music? You know, for example, I, for years, used more of a classical intro. We use kind of the old rock / sports center intro. Maybe we should change it up. Should we go with different sorts of episodes? Are all of the episodes high yield or some more appreciated than others? This is your chance to get your voice heard, to kind of tailor the podcast to what we want to do going forward. Again, we're about 2.5 years in, and we really want to look at the next 2.5+ years and see what we can do to make things better. So again, please fill out the survey. You will find it up on our website. You will find it in our mailing list. You will find it on Facebook and on Twitter. Straight from the Cutter's Mouth is back with the privilege of being with two young ophthalmology residents who have made a big impact in the world of ophthalmic education in the 21st century. Joining me now are Andrew Poe and Ben Young from Yale University. Dr. Poe is a third-year resident at Yale University. Dr. Young is a second-year resident. And they run the Eyes for Ears podcast, which is an OCAPS and board review podcast that they have independently put together. You can find that podcast at eyes4ears.com, E-Y-E-S, number 4, E-A-R-S.com. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us very much, Dr. Schreeder. We've been big fans of Straight from the Cutter's Mouth for a while, and it's a great honor to be here.
And Ben, not to give your senior all the glory, welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I've been listening to your podcast like all the time. I listened to it today, and it's awesome to get to hear you on this side of the cast.
Oh, you guys are too nice, and I'll send your checks in the mail, so everything's wrapped up nice and tight.
Tell them that. Hey.
So again,
because rent's due.
We're going to talk about a few things, and again, this, I know this is a retina podcast, but one of my passions is medical education. That's one of the reasons I started the podcast, one of the reasons you guys have pursued your podcast. So let's start with the basics, and I'll start with Ben. We'll work backwards. So Ben, why did you go into ophthalmology?
Yeah, so I had a mentor in med school who gave me advice that hopefully this is helpful that if there's med students out there listening, or, you know, maybe even residents who are trying to pick on fellowships. His advice was to pick or imagine the worst day in a specialty and see how much you like that day. And that my mentor's reasoning was, you know, like every specialty has an awesome day where they feel great about what they did. You know, for us, you know, you get a patient in 20/20 after cataract surgery or something, or, you know, in general surgery, save someone's life with an appendectomy. And, you know, that was kind of where I was trying to decide between when I was in med school, was between general surgery and ophthalmology. And, you know, I had kind of, you know, I tried to take like a heavier rotation in both to try to figure out, you know, what is kind of a worst thing these specialties look like. You know, I actually really liked my general surgery sub-I. It was great. But when I did an ophthalmology rotation, I still remember to this day very clearly all the patients we saw this night. I was taking call with a resident. Shout out to Wayne Tai, who's, if you're listening to this podcast, he's a glaucoma fellow now in Boston. You know, he had a really busy night. You know, we saw, you know, a ton of patients. The pager was constantly going off. He had to do a, you know, ton of procedures to help, you know, a wide variety of different problems. You know, order scans for a bunch of different people. And, you know, I was trying to help him all along the way. And by the end of it, you know, we were both exhausted, but I realized how awesome it was to be able to actively intervene on people who are actively losing sight and help bring it back. So I think Dr. Tai actually still doesn't know that, like, I was on the fence at that point, and that night made me decide to do ophthalmology, and I still think about it all the time.
Yeah, mentorship, man, is super, super important. And I think, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but we'll get Andrew's side too. You know, I think that, and I've referenced, like, why I went into ophthalmology. I think it's just like, I mean, it's very small. Some people are just born with a passion, or they know from the time they go to medical school that's what they want to do. I think for some of us who are on the fence, it's literally just a person who you interact with, who inspires you or shows you the ropes, who's really, really kind to you. And I think it's hard. It's important to remember, right? Because I think as you go up the ladder, I remember as a medical student, I was like, I still remember the names of every single intern resident I worked with. And yeah. Then as a resident, I feel bad. I don't remember all the medical students I met. I think it's like your attention kind of shifts, you know? You're not,
right.
Unfortunately, you remember certain people, but you don't remember everyone. I think when you're a med student, your world is so tied to the people above you and kind of learning from them, whether it's consciously or subconsciously, that it really can make a huge impact whether you really enjoy a rotation or, unfortunately, sometimes whether you really don't enjoy a rotation. But let's shift. So, Andrew, how about you? Was it similar? Were you also on the fence, or are you someone who kind of knew coming in that's what you wanted to do?
It's a mix of things, and similar to how a lot of people came to it. Like, growing up, actually, I have a family member with glaucoma, so I used to go to all his appointments. And, you know, as a little kid, you don't really have any exposure to ophthalmology, except I did, so at least I knew about the field from early on. Can't really necessarily say that that's why I went into it, but like many people, we don't really get ophthalmology in medical school, so I had to go seek it out, and I felt okay about all the other specialties, but really, ophthalmology was the only one that really interested me. So thankfully, I found my tribe, and it's been okay so far. With what Ben mentioned also, your mentor telling you, like, imagine the worst day, and if that's still a good day for you, go with it. My mentor in medical school said something similar, but a little bit different. He said, just pick something that gives you the most energy at the end of the day. Like, you know, different activities drain you, but some energize you, and pick the one that does that. At the tail end of residency, I got to say I hope I'm holding on to that. I think it might not be as good as we hoped for, but I'm looking forward to being with everybody in the tribe.
Well, and you referred to energy, and that's going to feed into our next topic, which is podcasting. You know, and people ask me sometimes, I think you guys have probably encountered the same thing. You have to be energized by doing it, to do it the way you guys are doing it, to offer a free educational resource. It has to bring you joy to do it. If you're just doing it to kind of check off a box for your day, or you guys wouldn't be doing this reason, but to check off a box on your CV, it's just not going to be sustainable. And you guys have really created a sustainable model. Eyes for Ears is a very, very frequently consumed podcast. And I don't have your metrics, but I do know that your Apple Store reviews dwarf ours, which is kind of a nice impact of how important and people feel. And you guys have 5 stars across the board, many, many people commenting how much they love your podcast. So let's talk about origin stories. So why and how do you start this podcast? What point? I mean, you guys are a year apart. It's a team effort. It seems like both of you are really pulling your weight. When did this idea come to fruition, and then how did you execute it? And maybe I'll let Andrew start, and Ben can comment as well.
Sure. It was kind of a happenstance, good, happy coincidence, maybe like convergent decision-making, because we had both been independently kind of thinking about it, really to reflect on, I think, again, talking about your 100th episode, when you were talking about how you created yours. It was, for me, neither of us really felt that something specific for medical education and ophthalmology, at least general education for residents and specifically for OCAP and board review, was available. And we were hoping that it was, like, pawing through pages of BCSC. I kept thinking, like, you know, if I could have audio tapes of all this stuff, it would be so much better. And I was actually thinking also of maybe one day doing something similar to Straight from the Cutter's Mouth or other kind of talk show type interviews style things, but I wasn't really sure how to go about it and such. And at around the same time, actually, Ben, you approached me with the idea of something specifically for residency education in ophthalmology. And I think you have actually a more fun side of this story with your fiance.
So
bringing it out into the open now.
So Faye, sorry to pull you into this, but from my side, where things started was on match day for us in med school. I matched to Yale, which is I'm super happy about being here, and my fiance was super happy about matching to Brown. Which is where she is in Providence. The only problem is that those are an hour and 42 minutes apart. So that was kind of the seed of, I knew I had to listen to something. I ran out of Freakonomics episodes at a certain point. And, I looked for resources out there, educational resources. I, of course, found your podcast, Dr. Schreeder, and, been listening ever since. But, it turns out in residency that I had to know about more than retina. So, I think, kind of like what Andrew's saying, we decided if something doesn't exist, then why not? Why couldn't it be us that tries to make it? And that's kind of how we started off.
And I think Ben and I have a really good partnership, too, that had been proven to us before, not just from like the senior-junior dynamic, which honestly, at this point, it's like we're basically this.
Don't say that.
He's my chief now.
My senior.
But really, we did creative projects together before starting this. A lot of residency programs have these, like, for graduation, senior video skits mm-hmm. type thing. And Ben and I started doing them together. And I think we did a pretty darn good job.
I think it's pretty good.
It was a pretty popular video.
See it now. I'm excited. Expectations have been raised.
Anyway, it's from that we realized, hey, this guy really feeds on my creative energies and builds on it to make something better than what I could do alone. And we work so well together that it's been a pleasure all this time.
Yeah, exactly.
Since January, really.
Yeah, exactly. And, I think throughout this process, it's made me, I've always thought this, but really nailed home to me that I think for good things to come together, teamwork is just so important. I don't think either of us could have made the podcast on our own. And if we had never decided to team up, then, we would have never had anything come out. It's not like if one of us started, we'd have half the episodes, the other half the episodes. Without us together, nothing would have happened. So it's really nailed home to me the importance of teamwork.
So I'm going to make an aside and then we're going to come back. So my aside, pet peeve. I think senior skits are awesome. I helped, shout out to Doug and Alex that are listening. We put together a senior skit in medical school. We do our skit in residency second year. I think your skit's probably awesome and I'd probably enjoy it. But I think that the skits are designed for internal consumption, right? I think there's usually, and you guys can correct me, usually there's some inside jokes. There's things that there's people involved that you wouldn't quite understand. If you just brought in a random person and showed it to them, maybe they wouldn't find it quite as entertaining. They'd be missing a lot of the jokes. I think that we all kind of acknowledge that. So here's one of my pet peeves that I've seen is when at a residency interview, people show their skit. Because
yeah.
I think that, and I know, and I understand why people do it because they're proud of their residency. They're showing that the attendings can relax and attendings have a good time. But I think it's just so awkward for applicants. I'm just like, because it clearly isn't as entertaining for them as for the resident sitting and watching it. They have to now pretend to be entertained because they're at an interview and if they don't enjoy it, then people are like, well, why aren't they laughing at these jokes that they don't understand? And I just think, I don't know, that aside, that's completely unrelated to what we're talking about. But
yeah, well,
I agree with you, though. I did not bring it up during any of my interviews.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud. And if you did and you're lying about it now, I'm still proud of you. But let's talk about, before we move on, so let's talk about feedback. You guys have gotten tremendous feedback. You have 65 five-star reviews in the Apple Store. I'm sure you've gotten many, much more feedback on what you've done. It's a really, really incredible resource. And again, you got to be passionate to do it. This was something, you're right. An audio version of the PCSC was something that a lot of us thought about. But to execute it the way you have is really elegant because the PCSC, unfortunately, is very dry reading. And to take dry material and make it interesting enough for people to listen to and actually learn it is an art form, and you guys have done it. So tell us about the feedback you've gotten, and you know, what do you see going forward? Is this, I mean, is there a finite end to this because there's only so much material in the BCSC, or do you think that this is like the sort of podcast that has a certain episode cap, or what do you see as the longevity of what you're doing and what you want to do in the future?
Yeah, so addressing feedback first, I think it's been really interesting. You know, we're always trying to look to improve the podcast. You know, we don't think we have the perfect product now, and we think that there's, you know, hundreds of improvements that could be made. One thing that I think we both struggled with a little bit earlier on is, should our material be strictly academic and just us kind of not reciting BCSC, but just, you know, talking about material in BCSC, or should there be more fluff, and should it be more of us chatting during the episodes? And, you know, we actually got some feedback that perhaps it was better to just keep it strictly on point. But overwhelmingly, I think we've gotten the feedback that it's a lot easier to listen to if it sounds like we're having fun, and we totally agree. And in retrospect, makes a ton of sense. So I think if you listen to our episodes, you kind of see that progression over time of like that little improvement that we try to make sure that we're having fun, so it's easier for people to listen to. You know, I think right now our goal, you know, we're not like inventing anything. You know, we're not. It's not like
untrue.
This is any knowledge.
Untrue, but well, we can agree.
Well,
to disagree, but.
Right, but we haven't discovered any of the knowledge that we're reporting in the podcast. Is kind of what I'm saying. It's not like material that can't be found elsewhere. What we think we do provide is the listening environment, and our, you know, this is the environment that we want to produce of the feeling of being able to study with your friends in like a cafe or something, or in like a safe environment to study in a safe way. And that's some of the feedback we've gotten from, you know, anonymously from people who've taken their boards, that, you know, the material was helpful, but the main thing that we helped them with was to feel more comfortable and feel better about it and like come in with a better mindset, which is beyond our expectations of what we would get out of the podcast. But it's something that we really like to hear.
And I'll say that we have, I will acknowledge Ben and I have put in a lot of hard work in trying to get all the material out there just to. I did not realize what a chore social media custodianship can be, and getting
sure,
a few lessons on
sure.
it recently.
Yeah.
Just, we've had to split it up between, I think, Ben, you run the Twitter account. Mm-hmm. I kind of play at knowing how to use Instagram
and
Facebook.
The website, yeah.
But truly, though, it's not, I think we've truly got very lucky, because the audience that, like those 65, I guess is the number, those reviews, people have been waiting for something like this, and we haven't had to try that hard. We just put the stuff out there on various channels, and people just came to it because I think the need was always there.
Yeah, it's been interesting that, you know, we didn't know how much marketing or whatever would be important in getting the podcast out there, but I think that, you know, like 99.9% of our quote marketing was just word of mouth, and we've been mm-hmm. really surprised by the response of it. It's been really.
You know, it's very similar, you know, and I'm just, when we started, you know, we really didn't use social media as efficiently as we could have. And I think, again, because I was kind of a newbie to it, and I'm still not an expert. And I think that, but I think it's different, because both of us are, and you're dealing with a larger audience, but we're both dealing with kind of a finite audience of people who would really truly be invested. And it's a large group of people that's important, but we're not trying to pursue, we're not like a TED Talk that's going to pursue hundreds of thousands of people, right? Like, and so when you have a finite small community, I do think that social media is helpful, but unfortunately a lot of the people in our field don't use social media. So I think word of mouth is huge. And I think if you have a good product and you guys definitely do a great job, then people are going to consume it and listen to it. And that's really what's gratifying about it, is that people find it useful. I mean, one of the things I've inadvertently become, I won't even say expert, but I've spoken about and I've had to read about and learn about, is the changing field education. So you mentioned that you're filling a need, right? And you know that because people immediately started consuming it. Start in January, it's May, and you're super, super popular. And it's because you filled a void that was not filled and that people wanted to be filled. So let's talk a little bit about education in general. I mean, let's talk about ophthalmic education, how you guys are in finishing, you know, Andrew, you're finishing your residency. Ben, you're two-thirds of the way and three-quarters of the way through the four-year path. What are your thoughts on how education should change? You know, generationally, there's been differences. How do you guys best consume material? How do you feel like your classmates best consume material? Is it audio? Is it video? Is it traditional lectures? I mean, where do you see things going? If you have to project in 10 years or so, what do you think is going to be the best way to reach residents and teach them, besides obviously clinical care and in person? I'm talking about the didactic portion of it.
Right. You know, it's something that we've definitely put a lot of thought into. So I love our lecturers at Yale. I think we have like really, really good, amazing lecturers. But I think there's a fundamental problem with your standard didactic lecture in that, you know, if you have an hour long lecture and you've been presented with, you know, what, 100 to 120 facts, you know, a week out, I think the average person will remember maybe, you know, like 3 or 4 facts from that lecture. You know, in a year out, maybe it's like 1 or 2 things from that lecture. I just think that an info dump in that sense is not perhaps most optimal way to learn something. So there's a couple ways that we, you know, try to address that. One is the podcast format is somewhat amenable. You know, we try to do shorter episodes, 15 to 20 minutes is our goal, to make it the salient points hopefully easy to remember in the bite-sized package. We also try to release flashcards with each of our episodes so that you can review the material in the episode immediately and then hopefully continue to review that so that the memory can hopefully be encoded in a couple different ways. Our flashcards have actually been pretty popular too. I think some people just consume the flashcards. And to those people who do, I'm sorry I haven't updated them for the past couple weeks. We won't get around to it. We're sorry.
I'll add to that apology, but also maybe from a more conceptual point to your question, how do we think about medical education? I'd say maybe there are 3 components to how a didactic lecture might or might not work. The issue with learning things, especially with our material, I think, is you can divide it into 3 categories. There's the material itself, which honestly, we can't really do too much more as far as making it more digestible. It's just you got to know the spiral to low one way or the other. But so that's one category, just the material. 2 is the time. Like, when is that material given? When is it presented? When is it lectured? At for what length? And is it just once? If you miss it, if you maybe accidentally fall asleep, as I am not going to admit I'm guilty of sometimes, you miss it. And the 3rd would be preparation. Like, we all feel like we can understand and remember the material better if we've prepared for it better with pre-reading. But again, that kind of gets back to the 2nd component of time. Did it come at the right time? Did you have the preparations in time? And with the podcasts, that gives you, again, we can't really help with what the material is or the difficulty of it, but we can help with time and when a person chooses to consume it, possibly after they've prepared for it themselves.
I think that the really interesting thing is, now we're going to kind of, since it's a retina podcast, we're talking about retina, now applying some of these principles to retina education, right? I think that, you know, and I'd love to get Andrew's feedback. So just to give everyone an idea of your career plans, Andrew, you're going to be doing glaucoma next year at Wilmer, and go on to a fantastic career in glaucoma, which we definitely need glaucoma surgeons and glaucoma specialists. Ben is a retina hopeful who will be joining our field very soon. But I'd love to get Andrew's take, you know, because I think that just like a glaucoma specialist should be most interested in how do we educate non-glaucoma specialists on glaucoma, how do we best educate residents when they're in training on retina? And I like to focus on positives, not negatives. What do you think, guys, think the best teachers in retina have done to kind of make things easier? And what do you think are kind of the most critical things to learn as a resident in terms of retina? Even if you don't plan to do retina, what sort of things do you look back on and say, you know, that was really, really helpful that I learned that? And I'll give you an example from my training. And even if I hadn't done retina, I think something that would have been really, really useful was just feeling comfortable with a scleral depressed exam. I think that seems very basic, but just having that comfort level to be like, you know, I think I got a pretty good look at it. Yeah, maybe I'll have to refer this to a specialist, but at least I know that I was able to do a good exam. And I've seen a lot of variability across ODs and MDs in terms of how comfortable they are, and that's reasonable based on their experience. But anything from your experience, Andrew, you'd like to share that you really think was valuable that someone taught you?
Yeah, definitely. With regards to retina specifically, and that you're right. The exam, the retinal exam, I think, is one of the more challenging aspects of the field of ophthalmology, and too challenging for me, really. So I'm happy we can offer Ben to the field. But I've really appreciated, and among other things, all of our attendings and teachers here taking the time to really point out and help build our foundation for that exam. And even as a first year, of course, that's what we're all practicing doing, but and people were so patient and kind and really had attention to detail to help give me the time to try it, to do it, and to really make sure I knew what I was seeing and could reproduce it. But even as a second year, as the third year ophthalmology resident, when's like, oh, you still don't know what this is? Here, at least let me show you. Like, a very supportive culture, free of judgment, but just making sure that you know what you need to know. And that goes, of course, for the exam, but we have with teachers of all different styles that focus more possibly on the pathophysiology of retina issues, some on the clinical management of retinal issues. And everybody's got their own style, but we really appreciate just how that in knowledge and techniques and exam techniques in particular have been passed down to us in a very supportive way. And Ben, maybe since you've got a little bit more of a unique perspective on retina, do you think some of our, how do you feel like people have been for our education with it?
Oh yeah, no, I mean, they've been, they've been great. I think one thing that's really useful is having a diversity of different perspectives. Being taught how to do the same thing in different ways by different attendings who have different styles has been really helpful in being able to integrate those different things in the style that's most useful to you. For example, if someone has one great technique to do, like a gonioscopy or a scleral depressed exam, maybe it's like just difficult for you to wrap your mind around it. Then you hear about it from someone else's perspective, and then you can kind of, what both of us noted is if you integrate those things together into your own style, then it really, can help to develop you as an, at least for me, as a trainee ophthalmologist.
Yeah. I think our retina department here has, or maybe one of the more diverse set of faculty members. So all the different opinions and perspectives help a lot. Maybe to switch it to glaucoma, at least for a little bit. I know a lot of different glaucoma specialists have very different approaches to the same patient and the same problem sometimes. And just seeing everybody's angle at it really helps to give me a gestalt about how I can make my own path through this too.
Yeah, and I think that it's great that you guys have really had that. And I think hopefully most people have that when they go out. And
yeah,
it's interesting to kind of, I always like to hear residents' perspectives on residency education. And what you said about didactics was very interesting. I think that our field is one of the reasons we all love it is it changes so rapidly. And there's going to be more change on the horizon. That's what makes it interesting and lets us keep doing podcasts. Otherwise, we get static. But my last question for you guys, super important. Who came up for the title, the Eyes for Ears? Whose idea was that?
Oh, that was Andrew. Yeah, that was Andrew 100%.
That's totally great. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I had a list of literally 30 or 40 possible names for it. Andrew looks like, these are okay. And then he's like, what about Eyes for Ears? It's like, man, I spent 2 days coming up with this list. So yeah.
Sorry, buddy.
That's great. Some people have it, man. I didn't come up with our name, so it's okay. My co-fellow Brian Hong with that one. But guys, well, I really appreciate you guys stopping by again. If you're out there, if you're a resident or even a fellow studying for your boards and you've been looking for a resource to help you study, Eyes for Ears is awesome. It's really good. I like to listen to it just to keep update myself and keep fresh with certain things. I really like it. And so if you're trying to stay up to speed with certain topics or you just are preparing for a test, I think it's a great resource. I hope you guys continue to do it. And you guys have really set a strong, you should definitely continue to do it. I want to see it through the end. And hopefully the end is a long ways away because you guys really have done a nice job. So
we hope so too. Thanks. We appreciate that.
Yeah. And we really appreciate your letting us come onto your podcast, and we'd love to talk more about talk and shop on podcast things.
Yeah.
If you asked earlier, where do we think we're going to go from here? And Yeah, that's an open question. We'd love to hear what you think we should do with it, too.
Oh, I'm going to tell you in a second off air. We're going to save that. Yeah. Take care, guys.
All right, thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
As always, you can find this episode and all prior episodes on our website, retinapodcast.com. That's RETINAPodcast.com. All 177 episodes, including this one, can be found there sorted by category. Our blog, Equal Round Reactive, Lessons from Our Pupils. Remember, you can claim CME credits for select podcast episodes via the AAO website. Simply log in as an AAO member and visit the link in our episode descriptions. On our website, you can sign up for the mailing list to get updates on the most recent episodes. At the bottom are links to subscribe in the Apple Podcast Store as well as the Android Store. You can like our Facebook page or find us in the Apple Podcast Store or the Android Store. We are on Twitter at Retina Podcast and two contest link on the contest link on our website or email us at retinapodcast@gmail.com. Feedback is the lifeblood of what we do, so that survey that's going around is super important, and feel free to reach out anytime to let us know things we can do better and the things we are already doing well. We also appreciate anyone who subscribes via iTunes or Android Store to leave your positive comments in the form of a review. Many thanks to the Eyes for Ears team for what they've done contributing to the field and also for joining me today. That's Dr. Andrew Poe and Dr. Benjamin Young. Thanks to Dr. Louis Kai, Dr. Angela Chang, and Dr. Michael Venicasa for preparing this episode. Listeners, I know it becomes trite and I say it every time, but please, again, thank you for what you do on a daily basis, the patient care you provide, the articles you read and publish, and the conversations you inspire here each week. This is Jay Schreeder signing off on our last episode here of June 2019. We'll be back next week on July 1st with a preview of Retinal Physician July and August 2019. That will be special also. We'll be, for the 5% of you who care about NBA, we'll be going through all things NBA towards the end of that episode. Again, see you then, and this is Jay Schreeder signing off.
Feeling.
This is straight from the cut.